Vayetze, page 146, we'll start towards the beginning. Parshas Vayetze is actually interesting. Many of the commentators note that if you flip through the Parsha from beginning to end, there's not a single space break in the entire Parsha. Most Parshas have little spaces in the middle, which the Gemara says was to give Moshe a chance to contemplate in between one discussion to the next discussion. This entire Parsha is one long block of words without a single space in it. And they mention that that is due to the fact that Yaakov took off in the beginning of this parsha running from his brother Esav, and in that sense of like running and in that which was created, the atmosphere that was created in the fearing for his life, running from his brother, it sort of just was this like straight running through the entire episode without ever having a space break. Just an interesting sidebar as we begin. In any case, so the parsha begins with Yaakov's famous dream, where he goes to sleep and he sees the ladder and he sees the angels ascending and then subsequently descending. And that, of course, is an entire discussion. I believe we discussed that a little bit last year. We're going to skim through that and pick up with the episode which immediately follows this dream. Now, what happens during the course of this dream is he's given a promise by Hashem. The promise is twofold. Number one, that he, again, is given himself the blessing that he will receive the land of Eretz Yisrael. The land of Israel will be his and for his children. And also, there's a second aspect of the vision that he receives, and that Hashem promises to take care of him. Because where is Yaakov running to right now? He's running to his uncle, Lavan, running from Esav, who wants to now kill him. He's running to his uncle Lavan, who lives outside the land of Eretz Yisrael in Haran, and wasn't a safe place to be. So Hashem promises him that he will protect him and return him safely back to his homeland. And so Yaakov receives this vision together with the meaning of the angels, again, going up and going down, and all of that significance in that particular dream. Maybe if we have time at the end, I'll share some thoughts on that as well. But let's get focused on what happens immediately after that. So it begins in chapter 29, beginning of Perek Chof Tes, right after the dream. So on page 146, Vayiso Yaakov Raglov, and Yaakov lifted up his feet, Vayelech Arza B'nei Kedem, and he went towards the land of the Easterners. He was heading towards Haran, towards the east, and he lifts up his land. So what's odd about this pasuk?
Is Haran north?
I don't think it was north. I don't know. I don't think so.
I could have just said he went toward the land of the Easterners.
Yeah, what does it mean that he lifted up his feet? It's an odd way of saying, you know, he went somewhere. He lifted up his feet and he went somewhere. So there are a couple of approaches here just to get us started and warmed up for what we'll be tackling. Rashi comments that this is the very last Rashi on the page here. Mishin is Boser Besura Tova. Once he received the good news, Shohuftach Bishmira, that Hashem had just promised him protection. Now Yaakov was a little bit frightened. He was on his way to his uncle Lavan, probably knew a little bit about what his uncle was like, as we're about to discover towards the rest of this parsha. It's not a simple journey that he spent. And Hashem just promised him that he'll protect him and he'll return him safely. Says Rashi, Nosalibo es raglo v'nasekal lolechas. His heart lifted up his feet and it was easy to travel. Which is, on one level, very simple to explain in the sense of, yeah, he felt good, felt unburdened, and it was easy to travel. And the Torah expresses that by saying, Vayisa raglov, Vayisa Yaakov es raglov. He like picked up his legs. But there's, I think, just in reading this, I think there's a very beautiful a little lesson embedded within that, that very often when you find yourself having trouble getting yourself going, you have your trouble, it's not happening, you're not able to go, it's hard, your legs literally feel heavy, every step is a task, it's not going, that there's something that you're not into this. It's a real simple tale, a simple sign to tell you, this is a task that I'm excited about doing, I feel comfortable and confident about my success, versus something that I'm really very weary about tackling. I'm not excited about this. And the Torah almost describes that his feet were heavy, versus he lifted up his feet and he went easily. So as Rashi comments, he just received a promise from Hashem. Like, what can be better than that? If you just received a vision, the angels, the ladder, Hashem says to him, don't worry, I'll take care of everything, I got you covered, I'll bring you back safely. And then lo and behold, he found it very easy to travel, Rashi says. The Torah describes that as just picking up his feet and moving. So I thought it was an interesting little lesson that we take from that in terms of just being aware of our own adventures as we embark on things. You know, do we find ourselves ready to go easy, or is it hard? What's stopping us? What fear? What is it that's there that's causing us that tension? Because when you remove that tension, it's just easy to go right away. Yaakov got a promise and he was ready to move on. All right. Okay, let's move on. That's just a simple, that's an appetizer.
We see that, I mean, like different times when somebody lifts up their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like just that the person is aware that they're being directed by Hashem, you know, like they're doing His will. They lift up their eyes, they lift up their feet, and they're on a mission. So.
Right, Eleanor was pointing out, we asked the question, maybe it was, I think, 2 weeks ago when we learned, 3 weeks ago, the Akedah, that, no, yeah, it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, we pointed out that we had a bunch of references of lifting up of one's eyes. Abraham lifts up his eyes, and there was the ram. Yitzchak lifts up his eyes, and there are the camels. There's this reference of, instead of just saying they saw, this lifting up of the eyes, and we asked exactly what that meant. We didn't have an answer. So you're pointing out that here we have a lifting up of one's feet. And here, that's a reference to feeling comfortable and confident in the journey. I've just been promised it was easy for me to go. So you're suggesting maybe the lifting up of one's eyes was also a fulfillment of fulfilling Hashem's will, His desire, His plan. I see the ram, I see my intended wife in the case of Yitzhak lifting up his eyes. I know, it's an interesting thought. But we do see this idea, this lifting up of eyes, lifting up of feet. And that, so there's probably some language, some concept that's being conveyed. Yeah?
Maybe, could it be seen from the outside in versus someone realizing or feeling like themselves being spiritually elevated, but it's the external, whoever it is, that's looking at that particular person, and they're seeing that person as being elevated in some way.
Interesting. I mean, you're saying from the person himself, they also feel that lightheartedness, but that someone sees that elevation.
Right. That's right.
Could be
that point.
And that's not Rashi's comment, but some possibility. That's Rashi's learning it more from the person's perspective of it was easy to go. Because he, Yaakov, felt light about it. Okay, let's move on. Beis, Pasuk, second verse. Vayar, and he saw. Right, notice that it doesn't say he lifted up his eyes and he saw. So right, we sometimes see it and we sometimes don't. Vayar, and he saw. Vihine ve'er basodeh. So Yaakov's on his way. He just had this major vision. He's been commanded by his father and by his mother to leave their home, to travel to his uncle. He's on his way, and the first episode that happens to him is the episode which we skipped over, this dream, famous dream with a ladder. The second episode that happens to him, the Torah records, is he sees a well. Now, wells come up all over the place, which we'll get back to. He sees his well. V'hinei shom shlosha ed reitzon rovtzim aleha. And there are three flocks of sheep that are laying beside the well. Because it is from this well that their shepherds will give them to drink. And the stone over the mouth of the well was large. So the Torah paints the following picture. Yaakov's on his way. He sees a well. There are three flocks sitting around it. No one's drinking because there's a rock on top of this well, and the rock is large. So far, so good. Gimel. Venes vushama kol ha'adarim. When all of the flocks would gather, v'golalu esar even me'al piha ve'er, then they would roll the stone from off the mouth of the well. V'hishku es hatzon, they would then give the flocks to drink. The Heshivu Esha Evan Al Piha Be'er Lim Kaima, and then when every one of the flocks had had what to drink, they would return the rock on top of the mouth of the well. Is this story familiar to most of you? That you hear this every year we read it through? Okay. Right, we didn't skip it last year, right? Okay, so the Torah is painting the following picture. Now, obviously, we need to keep in mind, every time we come across any pasuk in the Torah, there's obviously one question which we need to ask ourselves, along the lines of,
why are you telling me?
Good. Why are you telling this to me? Why is this relevant? What's the lesson? The Torah is not here to tell us irrelevant pieces of information. It's not a history book. It's not a story book. There are important pieces of information, and if it ever repeats itself, we ask the question, why did it repeat itself? And if it told us an extra word, an extra phrase, we ask, Why? So we have here a story that's being painted. We have here a story which seemingly should be important, that Yaakov's on his way. Again, we have to pay attention to all the details of the story. What are the important details of the story that we've been told so far?
Three flocks.
Three flocks. It's somehow important for us to know how many flocks have currently gathered. Three. What if it would have been two or six? I don't know. Three flocks have gathered. Are they drinking water now?
No, yet.
No, why not?
Because
they can't get the rock off. Why can't they get the rock off?
Too heavy.
Large.
Too large. And when will they get the rock off?
When more people come.
When more come. So clearly three is a portion of a larger group of shepherds that are handling this well. So we have a smaller subset of a larger group. Since it's only the smaller subset, which the Torah gives us a specific number, it was three of them, they were unable to move the rock. And the Torah tells us the procedure. But when everyone would gather, then all together the shepherds would be able to remove the rock. Everyone would be able to drink at the same time. Then they would put the rock back. Relevance? Do we know it yet?
No.
No, I mean... Okay, so he came across a well. Who cares that the way that this well worked? Let's move on. Let us move on. Dalid. Right? Yeah.
Clarification. Does it say move or remove?
I think the actual word is to roll. Galulu is... The galulu es ha'even is a word which means to roll. Galgel is a misgalgel, or all. So it seems like it was the type of rock, even though I think in my mind what I picture is more of a flat, large rock that had to be pushed off the side and pushed back. The word the Torah describes it as much more of a round, circular rock that was actually somehow rolled off. I don't know about this. I'm sure there is some significance to that, but that's the word the Torah uses, was to roll the rock off as opposed to push the rock off. Moving on, Dalid. Fayomer Lahem Yaakov. So Yaakov approaches these three shepherds. They're a group there that's gathered. They're waiting for everybody to gather together to give their flocks to drink. Achai. So he says to them, my brothers, Me'ayinatem. Where are you gentlemen from? Answer the shepherds. Fayomer Mecharon Anachna. We are from Charon. Excellent. Yaakov's in luck. This is like Eliezer. Eliezer comes to the well, and right away Hashem sends to him the first girl that he sends is the girl that he's eventually going to take to marry Yitzchak. Yaakov also is privileged to, right away, the first group of shepherds that he comes across on his way, they're all from Charan, which is exactly where he needs to go to meet up with his uncle, Lavan. Says Yaakov to them in Pasuk Hey, Vayomer lahem hayidatem es Lavan ben Nachor? Do you know my uncle Lavan ben Nachor? Vayomeru yadanu, and they say, yes, in fact, sure, we know him. Now there's an oddity in this Pasuk. Now if you don't remember, which I didn't until I saw this pointed out by somebody else, the lineage, the genealogy of the family of Yaakov and his parents. So Yaakov's parents were Yitzchak and Rivka. Right? Rivka was the whole story from Eliezer. If you remember, Rivka had a brother. Who was Rivka's brother?
Lavan,
right? That's where Yaakov is going to now, his uncle. Who was their father, Rivka and Lavan? Bethuel was their father. That was from the story when Eliezer came and he told over all the episode. He was talking to Rivka and Lavan's father, Bethuel. And who was Bethuel's father?
Nachor.
Nachor was a brother to Avraham. That's how the family lineage goes. That's why Avraham sent his servant Eliezer, and he said, go to my family. My brother Nachor has a son, Bethuel, who has a daughter, Rivka. Go to my family and find a wife. So it links from Avraham and Nachor. Well, that looks busy back there. there's Avraham and Nachor at the top. From Nachor comes Bethuel, which would parallel with Yitzchak. They were first cousins, and then the step down would be Rivka and Lavan and Yaakov. Just that's how everyone winds up as their cousins. So who is the father of Lavan? This is pretty confusing. You know. Who's the father of Lavan? Bethuel. How does the Torah describe Lavan? Ben Nachor.
Mm-hmm.
So that's odd. Now again, these are the kinds of things where, like, because we're not familiar, like, we read right past that and wouldn't pay attention, but if we actually, like, it's as if you're really familiar, it's as if I identified, you know, one of you as the child of your grandparents. Like that. What do you mean, child of God? What happens to my parent? Why are you using my grandparent to define me and not my father?
Maybe it's
dead. Even so.
Yeah.
Right? We don't call up a person for an aliyah, you know, after the fun, you know, that's who they are. It's so-and-so, the son of so-and-so. So the Ramban was bothered by this. The Ramban was bothered by why Lavan is identified as the son of Nahor, who was really his grandfather, and not the son of his father. So he gives three interesting answers. This is just more appetizers to our main point, but I found this interesting. So Ramban presents three different ideas. Says about number one, he thinks, Hayanikar viyadua b'shem avi aviv, he was called by his grandfather, ki hu nichbad me aviv v'rosh beis avosam. Not a knock against Pesuel. It's just that his grandfather, Nachor, was really special. So since he was so special, so Lavan wanted to affiliate with the big Yichus in his family. Imagine if a person has a Rosh Hashiva for a grandfather. And his father was a good Jew, but a simple Jew. And then the grandson. So when the grandson introduces himself, what does he say? I'm the grandson of the big Rosh Hashiva, because everybody knows my grandfather, the big Rosh Yeshiva, his name is all over the place. And my father is a special person, but, you know, he was a simple Jew. So he introduces himself, I'm so-and-so, I'm the grandson of the big Rosh Yeshiva. Aren't you the son of somebody? Yeah, but you wouldn't know who my father is, so I use my grandfather. So says Rabbi number one, could be that Nachor was significantly greater, and their Lavan therefore utilized that name to introduce himself, to identify himself with a person who is bigger in stature.
So why wouldn't he just say, I'm the grandson of?
Right.
So the Torah, so okay, that already been there, but that Torah says, Lavan ben Nachon, I think they use the words ben, like, I'm the son of, and they, I think, probably use that in a less rigid way than you're asking, but that's it. Number two, he suggests, maybe it's opposite. Maybe Besuel was actually a low-level kind of person that was actually degrading to Koy. It wasn't just that he was a simple Jew and Nachor was greater. It's that Besuel was somehow a nobody. As Ramban proves from the story when Eliezer comes to tell over his story, the Torah records that Lavan, who was Besuel's son, answers for his father often. He's listed first as the one who gave the answers, showing that, like, Besuel was, he was a nebuch, he was a nobody, so that he identified with his grandfather, not because his grandfather was so great, not because his grandfather was a Rosh Hashiva, but because it was embarrassing to identify himself by his father, so he ignored him to be able to identify with his grandfather. Note the difference, right? The first approach was that his father was a fine person, but his grandfather was something special. His second approach was his grandfather was just a fine person, but his father was embarrassing, so he didn't want to identify with that at all, so he used his grandfather. A third approach, says the Ramban, is that they both were fine people, Lavan and Besuel and Nachor, but the difference was that Nachor was a brother to who? To Avraham. And everybody knew of Avraham, and everybody wanted to somehow affiliate themselves with Avraham, so that Lavan would go around saying, I'm descendant from Nachor, because everybody knew Nachor was the brother of, was Avram. So the Ramban has like three totally, you know, all three possible options, he says, as to why would he ignore his father, either because his father was a negative, or because his grandfather was such a major positive, or because Avraham was so significant, he wanted to attach himself to Avram. Okay, yeah.
I haven't let enough of this to know, but another idea comes to mind, and that would be that perhaps he had a certain characteristic or quality about him that was, you know, that Nachor had, that he wanted to identify with.
Certainly possible. Okay, let's move on. Let's get to the, keep moving. Okay, so Avram meets up with the three shepherds. They got the stone on top of the well. Everybody's waiting around. He asks them, do you know my uncle Lavan? And they all say, sure do. Says, I'm sure he said it just like that. Yes. Where am I? So Vav. Fayomer Lohem, Hashalom Lo. So he says to them, Hashalom Lo. I guess literally translated would be, is there peace to him? Vayomru, Shalom. And they said, peace. Vihine Rachel Bito Ba'oi Matzon. And look, his daughter Rachel is coming with the flock. two interesting points to this pasuk. What was the exact words of Yaakov's question to them? Hashalom lo. What should they have answered if they wanted to directly parallel that? Yeah, shalom lo. However they would say somehow. What do they answer? They just say, shalom, peace. And then what do? They end and they say, look, his daughter, they don't say look, they say, hine, behold, his daughter Rachel is coming with the flock. So let's break down the two parts of this. So the Or HaChaim, one of the classic commentators in your standard Chumash comments, that the reason why they didn't answer exactly the way that he asked Hashalom Lo, is there peace to him, and they just said peace, is that Yaakov was really asking two questions. When he said Hashalom Lo, is there peace to him, he was asking two types of questions. Embedded within that one phrase was two things. Number one, he was asking, how is he personally? Is he okay? Financially, social, psychologically, emotionally, what's doing with him? Is he shalem? Is he whole? Is he complete? Is he well? And he was asking, and how is he with you? Like, what's the relationship here? Is there a lot of tribal fighting? Do you guys get along with him? What's the status here? What hashalom, is there peace with him? In other words, shalom means peace, and it means complete. So hashalom lo actually has two meanings. Is there peace with him, and is there completeness with him? And he was asking two questions. Is he complete? Are things well with him? And is there peace? What's the relationship? What's his status? What's his standing here in the community? To which they answered, shalom to both of your questions, complete and peace. Everything is good. We're okay with him. He's okay with us. We have peace. But why do they add that next phrase? Why do they then add, Vihine Rachel Bito Ba'a Im Hatzon?
Maybe to confirm what they just said.
Okay.
They're all getting along nicely.
Excellent. So one possibility would be to confirm. Now, how would that mean? How would that be a sense of confirmation that everyone's getting along if you take that approach?
They're all willing to work together.
Good. So number one, that would be saying, yes, things are well with him. Things are well with him personally and within the community. Look, he has sent his daughter to shepherd the flock. No one would do that if they didn't trust us to take care of her. So you see, things are good. That's one possibility. What's the most simple reason why they would add that phrase of, here is his daughter with the flock?
Maybe they were saying that because suddenly they just saw her and they were talking about him, and so this is just more of an acknowledgement that they know them.
Okay.
She's a member of the family.
Add to that on a simple level. Well, within that simple, yes, you understand.
They want to change the conversation.
What's that?
They want to change the conversation.
No, because they're not really changing it. They're still talking about him.
I think they want to reveal too much about it.
Okay, so take that and adapt it on the most simple level. Both the Or HaChaim and the Netziv, who was one of the Rosh Hashiva in Volozhin just 100 years ago, writes very simply of, go ask her. in the sense of.
Well, that's too simple.
No, but in the sense of, here you are, a shepherd. You're one of three shepherds in the area.
Yeah. No, come on.
Right?
I didn't hear it.
She was acknowledging that she was cheating, and she saw that in the notes. And you're a shepherd. You're one of three shepherds, which is really part of a bigger flock that all share this well. She's clearly one of them. And a stranger shows up who does not identify himself and says, hey, you guys know Lavan? And they say, yeah, we know him. Is there peace with him? What does he want?
Information.
Why does he want the information?
Wants to know how he'll be received.
I
don't know. I mean, Yaakov wants it because he wants to know what he's getting himself into. But you're the shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, are you part of the mafia?
It's like a credit check almost. He wants to make sure that he's a guy.
Well, that's what Yaakov's doing, but the shepherds don't have any idea why they're asking these questions. Mm-hmm. So they said, everything is well. There's his daughter. If you want more information, you can go ask her. She's in the family. She can tell you more. I don't want to get involved. I'll give you the basics. Yeah, things are well. Things are good. But it's not my business. You want to find out about him? Go to the family, because she'll tell her, she'll go home and tell Dad that someone's, inquiring about him at the well. Someone just stranger shows up and starts asking about him. So on a simple level, they simply add, yes, things are well with him. Look, there's his daughter. You got any more questions? You can go ask him. Okay, that's a simple level. Now, there's the Archaim commentary has got three other approaches as to what really might be going on when they add this line of, there is his daughter, she's shepherding the flock. One of them you guys already mentioned, in that it was a proof that things are well. Look, things are so fine between us, he even allows his daughter to come and shepherd and doesn't have any concerns. Now, there's another approach which he says. Number one is they're saying, they're letting him know, yes, peace is with him and things are good, but you should know he's not a very wealthy man. And you know how they say that without really saying that?
His daughter
shepherding their flock, which tells you two things. Number one, he can't afford a shepherd. And number two, there must not be that many sheep because a single girl couldn't possibly handle a very large flock. So that says the Or HaChaim that they were actually giving a little bit more information about him in an innocuous way in saying, yes, things are good, peace is with him, we're not fighting, there's his daughter, she's shepherding his flock. Which says a lot. It says he's got a girl, he can't afford to have a male shepherd, which was clearly the norm at that time. Couldn't afford to have one, and his flock wasn't large enough to really she could handle it.
But it also says she's kind of spunky if she can handle any flock.
Okay, I get it. In a certain way, it would say a little bit about that. Clearly, you know, there wasn't the norm to have the women out there shepherding the flocks. He suggests a fourth answer. Mm-hmm. He suggests a fourth answer as to what they really were saying. They were saying something else about Lavan. Mm-hmm. What do you think that is?
I think that he really wanted to know the real truth because they don't want to admit, you know, what kind of guy Lavan really is.
Mm-hmm.
Talk with her, maybe you'll find out some more information, but they don't want to be guilty of actually saying it.
Okay, that going back to that first answer of where they don't want to get involved and they say, if you want to know, go speak to her. Right. Now, Chaim suggests, what kind of person sends his daughter out to shepherd the flock? When you're having your daughter shepherd the flock, are you protecting more your flock or your daughter? You don't send your daughter out to shepherd your flock in this rough and tumble world of male shepherds and gathering together to move stone. That's not the right thing to do necessarily. So says Yochaim, a fourth suggestion, what they were saying when they answered his question and they said, yeah, things are good, there's his daughter, deeper than go ask her if you have any more questions. Deeper than he's not such a wealthy guy. They were also saying he's a stingy guy. He's willing, instead of the price of whatever it would cost to hire an appropriate shepherd, he was willing to scrimp on that money to save himself a few bucks and send his own daughter out to shepherd by herself rather than have to pay the cost of doing it appropriately. That tells you a little bit about him. It actually tells you a lot about him. So. Right? So when Yaakov says, Hashalom lo, do you know him? Is there peace with him? And they say, Shalom, hine Rachel bita ba'a imatzon, yes, peace, here's his daughter. They've actually painted a lot of information, says Yerachayim, about him. A, they're saying, yes, we do have a good relationship because he's willing to send her. B, he's not a wealthy guy because he doesn't have someone doing it. And C, he's stingy that despite the fact we have a good relationship, that's not the smartest thing to do to send out your daughter as a shepherdess by herself without any other backup. And he's not willing to pay the price of what it would cost to have somebody appropriate. So we've really painted a picture of who he is and what you're getting yourself into. That says the Or HaChaim is included in their answer of, yes, she's coming with the flock.
Not only does it show he's stingy, but that he's willing to let the other men do the work. She can't help push the rock off.
Right, take advantage of the other ones, yeah. Good. Okay, let's move on. Excellent. Zion. Vayomer. And then Yaakov says, Hein od hayom gadolo eis heyosef hamikneh. He says to them, "Wait, hey guys, there's still a lot of time left today. It's not the time to bring in the cattle, the flock. Hashku hatzon ulachuru, give to drink and then go shepherd." Well, where is this coming from? He strikes up a conversation with a couple of shepherds sitting around the well. They're sitting around, no one's doing anything, right? Why? Now we know because the Torah tells us. Why are they not doing anything?
They're waiting.
They can't move the rock. They're waiting for everybody else to gather. Now, I don't know whether or not Yaakov knew that or didn't know. The Torah tells us those are the facts. We know that. So Yaakov strikes, hey, do you guys know my uncle? Yes, great. What's going on with him? Everything is well. Here comes his daughter. Hey, guys, why are you sitting around over here? There's still what to do. So Yaakov steps in and asks of them why they're not giving their flock to drink. Rashi points out, he's saying to them, I don't understand. Whether or not you're hired hands, the day's not over. You haven't fulfilled your obligation. And if you're not hired hands, but these are your own flocks, it's not time to bring them in yet. Keep them out and give them what to drink. So they respond to them and they said, Vayomru, lo nuchal ad asher yeyasu kol ha'adarim. They then repeat that which the Torah already told us. They then tell him, well, we can't, you see, because not until everybody gathers, v'golalu esa evan me'al pi ha'ba'er, then we will roll the rock off of the mouth of the well, v'hishkinu hatzon. So not only does the Torah tell us this once, but it goes through the story. We are now has to repeat this twice. First when it tells us the facts, and then when it repeats what the shepherds actually say to Yaakov, no, you see, Yaakov, we can't because we're only three here, and we can't move the rock. So we need to wait for everybody else to gather, then we'll move it, then we'll give them to drink. Okay, now we're set up. The Torah continues. Odenu medaber imam. He was still speaking with them. V'rochel bo imatzon asher lovia. Now Rachel has finally made her way over. She has finally approached and arrived at this destination. Rachel has come with the tzon which belonged to her father. Ki ro'ah hi. Because she was a shepherdess. What's extraneous in this pasuk?
She's a shepherdess.
Exactly. Excellent. You just told me that. You just told me she was coming with a flock, right? Why do you think she was coming with a flock? Probably a shepherdess. So the Torah says she was coming with the flock because she was a shepherdess. So the Ramban was bothered by the same question that you were bothered by. And the Ramban says as follows. What the Torah is coming to say here is that she was a shepherdess, but somebody else wasn't.
His other daughter?
Excellent. Ki ro'ah, she was a shepherdess, but Leah was not. The Torah is stressing it was only Rachel and not Leah. Why? Oh, same question. Why do we need to know, says the Ramban, the extra phrase that she was a shepherdess is to come to tell you that she was, but her sister wasn't. Why is it relevant that only Rachel was a shepherdess and not Leah?
To say that she's the oldest? The older?
Maybe. Okay, we're going to get... Okay, so it says in Ramban, first of all, the reason why he's bothered by this is because when we'll get to Sefer Shmos, Yisro, who was eventually Moshe's father-in-law, also had daughters who were shepherdesses, but he sent all of them out together. The whole story there is in the plural, that it was all of the daughters together out shepherding the flock. So the Ramban is bothered, so why would Lavan, if we have a precedent in the Torah where there is a female shepherdess, but she did it with her siblings, why would Lavan only send Rachel and not have Leah go? So it says there about three possibilities. Ulai ba'avur ki eine Leah rakos, because Leah's eyes were soft, sensitive. Shahashemesh mazikla, and she would be physically harmed by the sun. Says there about a very simple explanation. It was simply a matter of love. Yisro had his daughters who were all capable of going out. And Lavan, not in any knock or positive comment to him, simply the reality was Leah was not physically capable of spending her days out in the sun. Answer number one, says the Ramban. Says the Ramban number two, Bavur Shahaisa Leah Gidoila. Leah was older. Now many of you already have been bantering back and forth. What about the Medrash that says that they were twins? So there is a Medrash that says that they were twins. The simple reading of the Chumash would clearly indicate that Leah was older. She's defined as the older. Now, it could be older as a twin. She came out first. There is an older in a set of twins. The simple reading is apparently that she's actually older. And the Ramban, in his commentary to this verse, takes that approach that Leah was actually an older sister to Rachel. There is a Medrash, which again, he doesn't comment on here, but that certainly exists, and many of you are familiar with, that says that they were actually twins, destined to marry the twins Yaakov and Esav. But the Ramban here is taking an approach that Leah was actually an older sister. What's the relevance of the fact that Leah is an older sister? Wouldn't that be more of a reason to send her as opposed to sending Rachel? says Raman, two ideas. Number one, Ru'uya le'ish, she was already old enough to get married. She was of age. And therefore, v'choshosh la'aviyah, you don't send a 19-year-old girl out to be amongst the flocks with the other shepherds, your other 19 to 20-year-old guys. That's not a good idea.
A little bit of sense.
If you have a 12-year-old girl, on some level in our crazy world where we think that's actually more dangerous, but in another way, it's safer. It's much, you're much less fearful of an inappropriate approach from the shepherd, the little girl. She's, where's her flocks? More people will probably stand up to help her. You don't have to worry about it. So it says in Ramban, Lavan kept Leah home because Leah was already of marriageable age, and sending her out with all of the of marriageable age shepherds was probably not a good idea. That, he says, what about Yisro? His daughters were of marriageable age, because we see, what was his complaint to them when they come home and they say there was this Egyptian man? What does he say to them?
Bring him home.
Maybe he'll marry you. Which, of course, Moshe does. So says the man, so like, why didn't Yisro? Why did he send out his girls up there? Because Yisro was a nichbad bimkoimo. He was highly esteemed in his place. The koyein ha'aretz. He was the priest of the whole land. The yiru migeshes ol denosos. And therefore, the shepherds would be fearful of approaching his daughters. Fascinating insight. When you're talking about Yichlos, this is the priest of the whole land. No one's going to make an inappropriate advance to his daughters because this is the daughter of the priest of the whole land. But Lavan was clearly not of that stature, so he kept Leah home and only sent Rachel. That's number one, he says. Says Raman, furthermore, Oshohaya Lavan Sanua Mimenu. Lavan was more Sanua than Yisro. He had more of the aspect of humility and modesty than Yisro did. Ki Mishpachas Avraham, Ksheira Utsnua, because after all, he is descendant from Nachor, a brother of Avram. There are certain family traits which made their way down. And one of them was this element of tenua, of modesty, of humility. V'rochel ha'isaktana v'ein lochushla. And therefore, he kept Leah back, not because he was afraid of the inappropriate advances, but because it would be inappropriate to send the girl out like this. Rochel was a little girl. So a little girl, it's not inappropriate, it's not a violation or of modesty to send her out. And the Rabban says, and this explains a verse which we'll get to in a few moments, what does Yaakov do when he sees Rachel for the first time?
Kisses her.
Says the Ramban, don't think that's inappropriate. This explains the whole thing. She was a little girl. That's why Leah's not out there. Leah's not out there because she's of marriageable age. And Lavan kept her home because he said it's not appropriate to send her out there to the shepherds. But Rachel, she's a little girl, it's fine. I don't have to worry about the inappropriate advances. So when Yaakov kisses Rachel, he's not kissing her. He's not kissing a girl who's 17, 18, 19 years old, ready to get married, in our terms of that age, and they may have gotten married much younger. She was a girl who was not even of that age. He's going to work for another 7 years before he'll be able to, it's really 13 years. 6 years he's going to work first, and then he's going to work for 7 years. She's 13 years from getting married still at this point. So yeah, he kisses her, yeah, that's why Lavan sent her, and he didn't have that problem. That the Ramban suggests, again, this is all going with the approach that Leah and Rachel were not twins, that Leah was older than Rachel, and therefore Leah was kept back because she was, it would have been more inappropriate for him to send her out.
How old was Rachel when she died?
I don't know. We could probably figure it out. I don't have it at the top. I don't have the tip of my tongue.
In the story, how old was she?
I mean, we could figure it out. I'm sure we go back because we know that she got married 13 years after he met her. And then we could figure out how old she was, if there's a source in Chazal when her children were born and how old she was when she died. I don't have it at the tip of my tongue, but we could figure it out. Okay, so in any case, so now we have, we're after this verse. Well, Rabbi Paltzman will go back and want to discuss the point. Vayhi kasher ro Yaakov es Rachel bas Lavan achi imo. When he sees the Rachel, we define her as the daughter of Lavan, the brother of his mother, and the flock, he approaches her. Vayogel es ha'evan me'al pi'a ve'er. He takes the stone off of the mouth of the well. Vayashkes tzon Lavan achi imo. And then he gives to drink the flock of his uncle, the flock of Lavan, and he kisses Rachel, and he cries, and they eventually go home, and the story will develop. So what's the conclusion of this whole well-rock story? So we had a whole setup over here, right? In which we were introduced to it. We were told twice how this is the way that it goes. Three flocks were there. They couldn't move the stone. They were waiting for everybody to come. Yaakov asks them, what are you guys laying around here for? Not everybody's here. Rachel shows up, and Yaakov approaches the well, moves the stone himself, gives everybody to drink, and then the Torah goes on. Let's ask the question we asked before. Why do we need to know all of this information? Mm-hmm. Are you suggesting a question or an answer?
An answer.
Okay.
So he sees he's going to be a future here. He's going to have to assert himself. He sees these are the people that are going to be in the fields. He's coming and he's showing his greatness. That he's going to, you know, things are going to happen here. You can't just sit around and, you know, and he's setting the tone for eventually he's going to become a very wealthy man here and come back. And he's already showing his greatness to these people, so to speak. He's introducing himself and is introducing his character traits to them.
Okay.
I mean, even today we read stories of how people who exert superhuman strength, a mother who lifts up a car because her kid is stuck in. I mean, when he saw her, he just had sudden realization of his future, and he just had this strength to do.
Excellent. Okay, so let's start with that. So Ramban takes two approaches here. Says Ramban, Yaruch HaKosov V'Sipur Hazeh, why do we have such a lengthy story here? Why is this relevant? You could have condensed the whole thing to, you know, Yaakov met up with Rachel at the well. Why do we need to know the whole background, the well, the story, the rock? Why is it relevant? Says the Ramban, Ki koyve Hashem yachlifu koyach, quoting a pasuk from Tanakh, those who trust in Hashem will be girded with strength. The Yerosov titenos, and those who fear Him will be given tremendous power. Says the Ramban, because where's Yaakov coming from? He's coming from a whole journey. He's on the road. He's been traveling all day. So for Yaakov to come from the road, surely exhausted, and to then to be single-handedly able to remove a stone, which clearly even the three shepherds together couldn't do, they needed everybody else to gather first to be able to do so. That was to tell us the great strength of Yaakov. Rashi himself makes a very similar comment to teach you that he popped off the stone like a person simply removes a cover from a bottle. You have a bottle of Coke and you just like turn off the cap. Yaakov was simply able to just move the whole thing on his own. So the Rashi and the Ramban would both seem to be taking an approach. The story is here on one level to let us know the strength of Yaakov. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, who was a Rosh Yeshiva in the Mir Yeshiva 60, 70 years ago, so he adds an element to that. That's not just to let us know his physical strength. Says because and his proof comes from Tfilas Geshem, when we daven for rain on the beginning, right, Sukkot time, we just did on Shmini Atzeres of Sukkot, where we daven for Tfilas Geshem by Musaf. So there's a bunch of phrases, piyutim, that we say is a special service as we begin to ask for rain. And there's a series of requests that we make of Hashem in the merit of so-and-so, give us rain. In the merit of so-and-so, give us rain. One of them is in the merit of Yaakov, who gave water to drink to the flocks. Let us, in his merit, get water as well. And the way that the tefillah goes is as follows. Yiched lev vigal even, one who was miyached his heart, who unified his heart, who gathered all of his strength together, all of his intentions, and moved the stone, mipi be'er mayim ba'avuro al timna mayim. In his merit, don't withhold water from us. So Chaim Shalevitz points out that the way that we daven, we don't just say that he had physical strength, he was yached his lev, he unified his heart, he put all of his strength and all of his intentions together into this one goal, and with that was able to garner the strength. And he has an entire, he has three different places where he discusses the same idea. Really what Eleanor was saying, the example of you know, a mother who lifts up a car because her baby's underneath. When a person is entirely focused on a task, they are suddenly endowed with what we would consider superhuman strength, because when you put everything you have into something, you suddenly find that we have abilities and talents and strength that we never thought we were capable of doing. And Yaakov, in seeing his Bashert, in seeing his Rachel, who would eventually be able to marry and father Klal Yisrael, had that moment of entire focus, of direction, with which he was able to remove a stone. This is the same focus Yaakov Chazal say in the beginning of the parsha, where he went to sleep in the place where he had this famous dream of the ladder. Chazal say this was the first time he had gone to sleep in the last 14 years. For the previous 14 years, he'd been studying in the yeshiva of Shem and Aver. He was sitting and learning. Never once went to sleep. So where do you get that strength to do so? How is that possible? The person is focused. The person is directed in ways that we can't really comprehend. And you're able to do that, which would otherwise be considered of superhuman strength. And Yaakov was able to do so in moving the stone. Fine. That's level number one. Why do we need to know this whole story? Because it somehow tells us about the strength of Yaakov, both his physical strength and his ability to garner all of his capabilities and his strengths and his talents and be focused. Says the Ramban, there's more. Chazal and the Medrash see a sod, a hint, a remez, a secret of what's going to take place in this story. Says the Ramban, number one, what detail was here that would have seemingly been irrelevant? How many flocks had already gathered? Three. Who cares how many flocks had already gathered? All you needed to tell me was that some of the flocks had gathered, but it wasn't all of them. Even if you wanted to tell me this, sir, why do I need to know it was three? There's got to be some significance to the concept of the number three. Says the Ramban, Lohodio Shiatzliach Bederech Hazeh. This whole story is to let Yaakov know that he was going to be successful, and he would have children who would merit all that was being hinted at in this story. What was being hinted at this story that he was being shown that his children would merit? Ki habe'er yirmos. What is a well always representative of? Sometimes Torah, sometimes the Beis HaMikdash. Where else do we see the be'er, a well, being having a hint to the Beis HaMikdash? It actually came from last week's parsha. Last week, Yitzchak, we go back a generation to Yitzchak, was living in Gerar. And living with Avimelech, and they kicked him out. They kicked him out. He'd become wealthy. They didn't want him there. And the Torah records after he was kicked out, he dug a series of wells, and he names the wells. And then the Torah goes on to something else. And the Ramban is bothered by it. Like, why do we have all these stories of wells? They're digging and naming wells. What's the significance? And the Ramban says over there as well that because the well is a reference to the Beis HaMikdash. It's the Makor Chaim. Just like the well is the source of water, the Beis HaMikdash is the source of all life. And there, in the story over there, he named the first well Asek, because the shepherds of the area fought and quarreled with him. The word Asek means to quarrel. So he named the well Asek. Says the Ramban, Yirmoz Lebayis HaRishon. That is a hint to the first Beis HaMikdash, where our enemies quarreled with us until they eventually destroyed it. Then the Torah says he dug a second well. And the second well, after Vayachru Be'er Acheres, Vayarivu Gam Aleha, they fought about him on that well too. Vayikroshma Sitna. Sitna means hatred, a much stronger word. Says the Ramban, the second well is a hint to the second Beis HaMikdash, and it's called Sitna, which is a stronger level of hate, to describe the enemies of the Jewish people during the second Beis HaMikdash, and the long and bitter exile, the hatred that would stem from the second exile, which we are still in right now. Then he dug a third well, Vayachbor Be'er Acheres V'lo Ravu Aleha. And on the third well, there was no dispute, there was no fight, Vayikra Shema Rechovos. And he called its name Rechovos, Rechov, from expansion, to expand, the large opening. Says the Ramban, that's a remez, that's a hint to the third Beis HaMikdash, upon which there will be no dispute, and the Jewish people will expand throughout the world, and the presence of Hashem will be known everywhere. So the Ramban found in last week's parsha with the wells also a hint to the Beis HaMikdash. Says the Ramban, here too the well represents the Beis HaMikdash. Says the Ramban, Gimel Edreitzon. What strikes you when you see three? Do you think three Batei Mikdash? Ramban here says there's another aspect of three. How many times do we visit the Beis HaMikdash per year? Three times. The three flocks are representative of the three times we'll go to Yerushalayim to draw water. What are all the flocks trying to do? Draw water from the well. What do we do when we go to Yerushalayim in the Shalosh Regalim, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot? Drawing water from the well. Shlosha Regalim, three times ago, Ki min haba'er hahu yashku ha'adarim. Just like from that well were they drawing water, Shemisham ha'yushoivim ruach ha'kodesh. When we would go to Yerushalayim, we would draw from the well the divine inspiration that was present and available to us during the Shalosh Regalim, during the three pilgrimage festivals of Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. He adds as well, Ki mitzion teitzei Torah, from Tzion, from Yerushalayim, comes Torah, and Torah is always compared to water. So in the same way that the shepherds would come to draw water from the well, we would go to Tzion, we would go to Yerushalayim three times a year to draw water from the well, to draw the Torah, to draw the source of inspiration, the Ruach HaKodesh, the divine inspiration in the Torah, out of Yerushalayim. V'ne'esu shama kol ha'adarim. What would they be waiting for, these three shepherds? Everyone to gather. Because what happens on the three Shalosh Regalim? It's not just those three times, but during those three times, everyone comes to be able to get water from around the whole world. V'golulu esa evan v'hishku. And then when everyone is gathered, then what are they able to do to the rock? Only then are they able to move the rock. Shemisham ha'yushoyev emruach ha'kodesh. V'heshivu esa evan. But then what happens once they've given their flock to drink? They put the stone back. Munach l'regel haba, where it's covering the well until the next regel. Says the Ramban, there is an element of divine inspiration which is available and accessible to the Jewish people when? During the Shalosh Regalim. And when all the Jewish people gather together on Yantiv in Yerushalayim, then they're able to, so to speak, remove the rock and dig their buckets down into the well and draw up the inspiration of Torah and Ruach HaKodesh, divine inspiration that's available to them during that time. But what happens when Yantiv is over? The rock gets covered. And says the Ramban, this is a hint to the reality there is something different in the spiritual air during Yantiv. The rock, with the power of the Jewish people gathered in Yerushalayim, have an ability to uncover a rock which is covering the mouth of the well, making accessible the water to those who want to get from it. If you gather there, when you're together, you can remove the rock and you can get to drink. But when Yantiv is over, before everyone disperses, they put the rock back. And now the source of inspiration is covered. And you have to wait until the next Yantiv to be able to get it again. Says the Ramban, this story is a hint to the way that it works. If you want to tap into that, the depths of the Ruach HaKodesh, the depths of the Torah, you got to be there, and you got to know that that window is only open for a certain specific time. And you better take advantage of get to drink while it's there, because if you miss that slot, you can't get what to drink. You need to sit around waiting until everyone gathers again. So there's an element of divine inspiration which is open only during Yantiv, and you need to make sure that you're there to be able to drink it up. Fascinating insight, says the Ramban, the hint, why we are told the significance so many times of the stone, the rock, the three, who cares, is to let you know the way that that divine inspiration is available and accessible only to those who come to seek it. And with that, I leave you. Have a fantastic rest of the week. Enjoy your time off from whatever it is that you would otherwise be doing on Thursday and Friday. And we will meet up, Meretz Hashem, next week.
Rabbi.